title for our lesson this week, Christ's Victory Over Death, suggests that through his death, Christ vanquished death forever. If that is a biblical statement, does that make it true for all time? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, host and study guide author for our discussions this quarter on life everlasting, on death, dying, and the future hope. I am Professor Emeritus of Biblical Studies from the Walla Walla University School of Theology. My conversation partners, Jody Washburn and Dave Thomas, are also from the Walla Walla University School of Theology. So let's take that opening question that I asked. That maybe is a naughty question. Maybe I should come up with a better one. But Christ's victory over death, is he vanquished death forever? Militaristic. Does that make it true for all time?
I'm going to come back to you as a literature professor who loves rhetoric.
Whoa.
So think about you have listed as one of the texts for this week is 1 Corinthians 15. And there's a line in there, you know, where, O death, is your sting? That has power. When I hear that, like parts of 1 Corinthians 15 read aloud, or when I read it aloud myself, it carries a certain weight. Mm-hmm. But does my recognition of this, right, that this what this death is not the final word, the last bit of the story, the end, you know, the end of the story, does that mean that death doesn't sting? Absolutely not. In a way, right? When we face death, when we face watching an aging parent slowly ebb away, we face sitting with someone who has suddenly lost a loved one, right? And we see the grief racking their body. That does sting. So I think that there's more, you know, we could say more, right? The death doesn't have to be the end of the story. We could say all of this is accomplished mm-hmm. by Jesus, but agreeing to that doesn't mean death doesn't hurt, and it's very real.
And every death is, I mean, if it's a gradual one, you see the encroaching, you know, where death then becomes, the final death becomes a great relief.
Yeah.
But you have then these sudden deaths. My parents, for example, killed in an auto accident. It was very unexpected.
Yeah.
And today, especially glioblastoma, is a nasty cancer. My son-in-law's mother, I mean, she was doing fine. And a very devout woman. But all of a sudden, she's gone. So death is nasty. It hurts. It stings.
But that's why I think that statement is looking at an ultimate statement.
Yeah.
In the end, death has no sting.
Mm-hmm.
It has now, but it won't have.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's what adds power to it. That's yeah. why I feel chills in my body. Right? When you read this
or death, where's your sting?
Yeah. I mean, that touches us.
It's almost a taunt.
But it's because we recognize the sting.
Yeah.
But we also recognize what's being touched on here. And we talked before about the stories of resurrection in the Bible. I mean, all of these things can be both. You hear the story of the resurrection of a child. If you yourself have been on your knees begging for that and it has not happened, yeah. then just reading a story of resurrection can create tremendous layers of grief. And so all of these texts, I think, are an invitation to see these layers, and one does not negate the other.
You know, and I didn't take time to read them, but those stories of resurrection before the cross, one of the ones that really strikes me there is the Shunammite woman. What's so intriguing is that this woman, I mean, she tells several lies along the way. When the boy dies, she tells the servant to get the donkey ready, and her husband says, where are you going? I'll be okay. You know, so she doesn't say what's going on. And drive as fast as you can. And Elijah looks up and sees her coming, and He tells his servant, ask, is it well with your husband, with your boy? And she says, it is well. We don't tell the deepest things in our hearts to just anybody.
Yeah.
And she came up and she grasped Elisha by the feet, and Gehazi tried to push her away. No. Did I tell you, do not deceive me? Mm-hmm. So he sent Gehazi. I mean, it's an amazing story. As I was working through our lessons this quarter, that particular story really struck me with power.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not the death of Jesus that wins the victory, but the defeating of it and the resurrection that defeats it.
That's right. And it is a permanent victory.
Yeah. So it makes you wonder about death. What is death? Because to us, it's a permanent state. There's nothing we can do about death. It's going to come, and when people die, we have no recourse. But God has another dimension, apparently, where death is like a sleep, and he can awaken people from it.
There are several. Our formal lesson here actually takes the track of seeing how many ways that Satan tried to keep Jesus in the tomb, which is all right if you want to for that, but that didn't really strike much with me. For instance, in Matthew 27:62-66, the one after the preparation day, the chief priests and Pharisees went to Pilate. Sir, they said, we remember that while he was still alive, that deceiver said, after 3 days I will rise again. So he gave the order for the tomb to be made secure until the third day. Otherwise his disciples may come and steal the body and tell the people they had been raised from the dead. This last deception will be worse than the first. Take a guard, Pilate answered. Go make the tomb as secure as you know how. So they went and made the tomb secure by putting a seal on the stone and posting the guard. You wonder if Pilate really believed it.
Pilate was just, I love the tone with which you read that one line. Take a guard. You know, he's just tired of these people. It's the way to let them move on.
And, of course, all of those things are testament to the reality of the resurrection.
Yes, that's right.
In the end.
In fact, the harder they tried to keep him in the tomb, the more glorious was his appearance.
Yeah. So. Especially the part where they run into town announcing that their prisoner got away, which in the Roman times was a a death sentence. You could, if talk about substitution, if you were guarding a prisoner, his prisoner got away, the Romans had no problem. They just take you instead.
That's right. But I love this passage in Matthew 28 that talks about how explosive the resurrection actually was. And this is from the New International Version. After the Sabbath, at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and, going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. The angel said to the women, do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus, who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen. Just as he said, come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, he has risen from the dead, and he is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I have told you. So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly Jesus met them. Greetings, he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, do not be afraid. Go and tell my brother to go to Galilee, and there they will see me. The Official Quarterly has this interesting note. It says some scoff at the idea that the first people to see Jesus resurrected were Romans. Why? In what way is this truth symbolic of what was to come, the gospel going to the Gentiles as well? I thought that was an interesting point. Mm. The first people to see the resurrected Lord were the Romans. Now, as I work through this lesson, I made a list. The mighty earthquake marked the crucifixion and resurrection. And in this resurrection, a number of the saints were raised as witnesses. That's from Matthew 27. But that wasn't all. We can make a list of all the witnesses. And I did that. You have the Roman soldiers. And then you have the women. And those raised with Jesus, Matthew 27. You have Peter in 1 Corinthians 15. The 12, also in 1 Corinthians 15. More than 500, 1 Corinthians 15.
That's a remarkable one right there.
Yeah.
And Paul says, and many of them are still alive. You know.
And James, 1 Corinthians 15, 7. And all the apostles, 1 Corinthians 15. And then you have the two disciples on the road to Emmaus. Disciples on the Sea of Galilee for breakfast. Thomas with the other disciples. So the number of witnesses was really quite remarkable.
And I've always wondered who the others who were resurrected with him, well, how many people are we talking there? I mean, is that all of the faithful from the Old Testament? And is it a vast crowd, or is it just three or four luminaries? You know,
yeah, that's a fascinating question. One question I want to tuck in here before the Philistines come upon us and the clock takes over. We have John 26 to 29. Some worry that they have doubts that they cannot be saved, but Jesus' words to Thomas should be both a great encouragement as well as a mild rebuke, because Thomas wasn't there. A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it in my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Then Jesus told him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." So there's room for the doubters in the kingdom.
And that last comment is very encouraging to me. Blessed are those who believe but have not seen.
Yep.
Because that includes all of us.
Yep, that's right. To sum up, we have surveyed a cluster of significant passages that tell us about Christ's victory over death. Many of these passages illumine all the satanic efforts to keep Jesus in the tomb. For us, the powerful truth is, he has risen. That truth lies at the heart of the Christian hope. My thanks to Dave Thomas and Jody Washburn, my conversation partners, to Kristen Byerly, our program engineer, and to each of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.